Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Speaking of Resilience podcast. I'm your host, Kate Madigan with the Michigan Climate Action Network. Today, my guest is Justin Snowden. Justin Snowden is a mobility strategist and project manager in the City of Detroit's Office of Mobility Innovation. In this role, Justin works to test and deploy new technologies with the goal of bringing advanced mobility options to Detroit. In our interview, Justin and I discuss public transit in Detroit, and we talk a lot about micromobility vehicles like scooters and how to make different transportation options accessible to everyone.
So when we think about accessibility, we think about it being geographically accessible. We think about it being financially accessible, and we think about it being accessible in terms of ability. And so my work is first ensuring that when a company decides to introduce scooters to Detroit, they do so in a way that the scooters are distributed across the city. We've actually seen a huge uptick in the number of those vehicles that are deployed outside of downtown and in neighborhoods.
We also talk about some lessons learned from the current pandemic and how streetscapes are changing as a result of people relying less on cars. Here's my interview with Justin Snowden. So thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today, Justin.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So to get us started, will you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to do this work?
Yes, I come from a very non-traditional background in that I'm not a transportation planner. By training, I'm an engineer and a lawyer, and I've actually spent the majority of my career working in business development in manufacturing. So two jobs ago, I was a tunnel lighting engineer living in Chicago, sort of thinking about how to light different tunnels around the US and Canada. One job ago, I was actually the director of engineering at a light pole manufacturer in Warren. That position sort of wound down, and I found myself thinking about what I wanted to do next. I knew that I wanted to do something new, and I wanted to do something where I'd be fairly uncomfortable. And so I've been hearing a lot about mobility. I didn't know much about it, but on a whim, I found out about this position, applied for it, and almost 2 years later, here I am.
Oh, that's great. That is already, you have quite a diverse background in doing different things in engineering and law background as well. And can you explain what the term mobility means? And for listeners who aren't really that engaged with mobility work and how it differs from, you know, transportation.
So mobility and transportation are very similar. We use the term mobility to trigger a mindset shift. And so when you think about transportation, it is, how do I get into my car and go from point A to point B? Mobility in a lot of cases is going to be multimodal. Maybe it's an instance where you're not paying for the car, but you're paying for a few different pieces that'll ultimately make up the ride. So it's, you know, very situation specific. And in Detroit, when we think about mobility, we're working to ensure that the ability to get around is not a barrier or a limiter on your quality of life within the city. Regardless of where you live geographically, regardless of whether or not you have access to a credit card or a cell phone with a data plan, and very importantly, regardless of your level of ability, we think that all people should be able to get around and make the most of their time here.
Great. And so when I think about from Michigan Climate Action Network, when I think about transportation and how we need to move, decarbonize our transportation system, a big part of that is moving off of fossil fuel powered vehicles and electrifying our vehicles. Another big part of that is reducing the number of cars on the road and making it easier for people to get where they need to go without a vehicle. And so that's how I see your work in Detroit as fitting into this picture. Is that how the City of Detroit's Office of Mobility Innovation, is that what the office is focused on overall?
That is a very large part of it. Our work sort of centers around finding ways for people to get around the city without the use of a personal vehicle, and ideally in a way that makes the most of our mass transit system. In Detroit, you hear a lot about mass transit, and typically what comes up are the people mover and the queue line. So those are our rail-based systems downtown. Altogether, I believe they have a total of 6 miles of track, and Detroit has close to 2,500 miles of road. So if you want to get around the city, while those are great options in the greater downtown area, In terms of mass transit, you're really thinking about our bus. And so our work is really focused on building out those systems and tools that individuals can use to complement the bus and make the most of that system.
And how is the bus system in Detroit?
I am a bus rider, and I think it's amazing. They've made a number of improvements over the last probably 3 years that have eased the ability to pay, made it much faster to get on and off of the bus, and made it much more convenient at key times. So I live off of Woodward Avenue in Detroit. And on mornings when I would ride the bus into the office, there'd be a bus outside my house every 10 minutes. It was amazing. So it was almost thoughtless. I could just wake up, walk outside, and I knew that a bus would be there and I could get to work on time.
And does the work that you do involve working with the bus system to make improvements there, or is it separate from the bus transit program?
So my role is sort of a hybrid. I spend a lot of time working on solutions that'll complement the bus. And so in that case, I'm interfacing directly with the Detroit Department of Transportation, DDOT, to think about the things that that organization needs to help sort of make the system more efficient. On the other half of my role, I'm also working with the Department of Public Works. And that's where my technology background comes into play. I'm able to think about technology solutions that'll make the streets safer for residents and pedestrians who are just, you know, trying to get across them.
Okay. So can you tell us some more about the specific programs that you're working on? I mean, it sounds like Detroit is really becoming a leader in some new mobility technologies. Can you talk about some of the projects?
Absolutely. So two very talented colleagues of mine, Hinda Rahu and Stacey Matlin, have done a lot with COVID in terms of new mobility technologies. Specifically, Hind has worked to develop a program where individuals who are working in essential capacities, so at grocery stores and hospitals, are given access to a micromobility that they sort of own for the duration of this pilot. And it's essentially, you know, in large part to expose them to these tools, but also to provide them with a way to get to and from work where they feel very safe and very comfortable.
What's a micromobility?
So it's all of the things that are not mass transit, that complement mass transit. So that can range from scooters to bicycles to micro transit shuttles. So, you know, 6 to 8 passenger shuttles that will move people from, you know, their location to a mass transit system.
Okay, great. So providing those access to those vehicles or the shuttles to essential workers, and how has that been going?
It's actually been going really well. It's a partnership that we're working on with the New Urban Mobility Alliance. They're part of the World Research Institute and Next Energy, along with Mogo, the city's bike share, and Spin Scooters. The adoption rate for some of those smaller vehicles has been really impressive. We're still in the data collection phase, so it's hard to comment beyond that, but I know that it's going well.
Great. And you're talking about essential workers. How have you seen that COVID-19 has changed or impacted mobility in Detroit right now?
It's been a really interesting situation. Prior to COVID-19, micromobility vehicles were sort of thought of as a first mile, last mile solution. Because of concerns about, you know, being exposed to the virus in confined spaces, post COVID-19, we see that there's a lot of anxiety around getting on things like buses or trains. With that shift in thinking about how to get around, we've seen a huge rise, not only in the frequency of micromobility vehicle use, but also in the distances. So pre-COVID-19, you know, a scooter ride may have been between 3/4 of a mile and a mile. It lasted 10 minutes. Since COVID-19, we're seeing individuals getting on scooters for 2 to 3 miles and riding for 20 to 30 minutes. So it's really sort of been a crash course in how do we think about micromobility vehicles, not as, you know, first mile, last mile solutions, but as end-to-end solutions.
Okay. What has been the community's reaction to shared bikes and e-scooters?
Surprisingly well. It's a new thing. It's something that Detroiters probably weren't used to seeing on the roads. So there's been some growing pains. But I went out downtown Detroit last Friday just to see what was happening. And the number of families that I saw on scooters was incredible. I talked to the city's bike share Mogo, and I hear about individuals who are sort of super users who ride, you know, in the dead of winter to get to and from work. It's been really interesting to hear people go from talking about not being able to find a ride to get to work or being concerned about how they were going to get home to now walking out of their place of employment and getting on one of these micromobility vehicles and making the trip.
That's great. I was in Detroit last year there was the big Democratic debate in Detroit, and there was a big event in March there as well. And I remember seeing someone in a suit, probably a really important campaign worker, just flying down the road on a scooter. And it just looked so like a great way to get somewhere fast that you need to go. Yeah.
Yes, I'm one of those people that in my sport coat gets on a scooter and rides around. And in the summer, it's really nice because of the heat. It's a good way to kind of stay cool to get from meeting to meeting.
Yeah. And it looks like fun. It looks like a lot of fun.
I joyride. On my lunch breaks, I'll get on a scooter and just ride around downtown and see what's happening.
Nice. Let's see. Well, one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, you know, many people associate Detroit with cars. I'm from the Detroit area, and my, you know, father and grandfather worked in the auto industry. How does Detroit's reputation and really history in car manufacturing impact efforts to bring more mobility options outside of the car?
So it's obvious that Detroit was the place that birthed the automobile. When you look at the geography and our road network, in some cases we had 8 or 9 lane streets. So that's a city that's designed for a car. As a result of that, what we saw in later years was a relatively high fatal crash rate between vehicles and pedestrians and vehicles and bicycles. And so because of those two things, a lot of the efforts to implement smaller micromobility solutions were thwarted by legitimate concerns about not feeling safe while people were on, you know, a scooter or a bike in a city that was designed for a car. And so it's been a real struggle to not only develop the micromobility solutions that will get people around, but then also implement some of the safety solutions and make them feel comfortable while they're on those micromobility vehicles. So we're aggressively implementing more bike lanes. We're also exploring technology at our traffic signals that'll help make drivers more aware of micromobility vehicles and sort of make it easier for pedestrians to get across streets.
That's great.
Michigan's largest farm-to-table dinner and fundraiser has gone virtual. Join us for Groundwork's annual Harvest Fundraiser, this year from the comfort of your home. Prior to the pandemic, the Groundwork Center was poised to host its 7th annual Harvest at the Commons farm-to-table fundraiser. For years, Harvest has brought together passionate people, including neighbors, farmers, and community leaders, to break bread and celebrate. This year marks 25 years of working together to protect the environment, strengthen the economy, and build community. Join us as we take the celebration online and into your home on October 10th.
When I heard you speak last year in Grand Rapids, I heard you talking about the technologies to help people in that first and last mile when you're using a scooter or other vehicle to get to your bus stop, for example, and how one of the important things that you're working on is trying to make it seamless. So, you know, instead of needing 5 different apps for all of the different options you have, trying to streamline that and make it more convenient. Can you talk a little bit about that type of work that you're doing?
Yes. Yeah, so unfortunately, you still need 5 different apps and maybe a tap card to pay for the bus. But that is something that we're thinking about. As part of my position, I'm able to sort of float between different departments. And I'm actually working a lot with our IT department right now on a large-scale data infrastructure that'll help link data from different systems into a single location. In order for those apps to be consolidated in one sort of seamless touch system, it starts with a strong data foundation. And so that's where we're beginning our work. is thinking about how we can start to pull together data from different sources into a unified warehouse so that it's all talking together. And then from there, we can design systems to sit on top of it that make, for instance, getting around the city using micromobility easier.
Mm-hmm. And as we talk about how our transportation system is changing rapidly, I understand a big part of your work in Detroit, or Detroit's focus, is on making sure that transportation options are accessible to everyone. Can you talk about that work and that priority?
Yeah, so when we think about accessibility, we think about it being geographically accessible. We think about it being financially accessible. And we think about it being accessible in terms of ability. And so my work, and I focus a lot on scooters because that's where I'm deeply involved at the moment, is first ensuring that when a company decides to introduce scooters to Detroit, they do so in a way that the scooters are distributed across the city. And that was a struggle early on. We found that scooter operators wanted to only deploy in greater downtown, which was problematic because residents who lived on the northeast side or the northwest side still needed access to micromobility vehicles. And so since COVID, we've actually seen a huge uptick in the number of those vehicles that are deployed outside of downtown and in neighborhoods. I mentioned accessibility in terms of payment. Detroit has a large unbanked population. And beyond that, they have a large population that does not have access to a data plan on their cell phones. And so if you're going to unlock a scooter, typically you need two things, a credit card and a data plan so that you can send the signal up to their server and it comes back down and unlocks the vehicle. So in another instance, I've been working with scooter companies to ensure that when they introduce these vehicles, they're also providing payment access options that allow individuals to pay with cash instead of a card, and also in Bluetooth to unlock. So although you don't have a data plan to send a cellular signal to unlock the scooter, if there is a way for an individual to just turn on their Bluetooth and use near-field communication to unlock the scooter, that's something that we need to explore and that we're really promoting. Mm-hmm. And then the third piece is ensuring that regardless of your level of physical ability, you have access to innovative ways to get around. That's been a tremendous challenge. Micromobility vehicles, and a lot of vehicles in general, don't make those options available. So that's something that we're constantly exploring, and I think is all too often overlooked. It's been tricky because when we go out on the street and we see someone in a wheelchair, it's very easy for us to say, that is not me, and so I don't need to think about that. That lack of empathy, I think, has really hampered the mobility industry. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I've really been promoting is to recognize that if we're fortunate enough, we're all going to age into disability. Your ears and your eyes and your legs will not work as well as they did at 30 when you're 75. And so maybe we start thinking about how are we going to design systems that we'll be able to use for years in the future instead of things that are really convenient for us right now.
That's a really great, important point. And what are some of the solutions right now for people with disability?
That's a difficult question to answer. And one that I'm just not equipped to because I haven't encountered that many, to be completely honest. Mm-hmm. There is a tremendous cost in outfitting vehicles with these systems. And that's what we hear from the private sector. I think that if there is a solution, it's encouraging the private sector to make those investments and sort of recognizing that it's better for the greater good if they do. It may not help profit margins today or tomorrow, but it creates a transportation system where everybody has a chance to fill, is available to them.
Mm-hmm. So what about other cities looking to improve mobility? From your experience and other communities, and based on your experience, what are some of the lessons learned or kind of pro tips that you have that you might want to share with other communities?
Absolutely. It's first and foremost, it's going to be something that is relatively scary. You're introducing a new mode or new opportunities, and you don't know if it's going to succeed or fail. and they're just based on the history of transportation in the US, there's a high likelihood of failure. We hear about mobility companies and transportation companies that go under all the time. Just because something can fail doesn't mean that we shouldn't try it. The one thing that I've learned from my manager, Mark DeLaverne, is that we've got to try a lot of stuff, and we can't necessarily be concerned about whether or not it's, you know, an A-plus rockstar project. We've got to try things to know if they will float, to know if there is an opportunity for them. And there are going to be some misses, and that's okay. Because for those misses, you're also going to have some makes, some wins. And it's those wins that are making a positive impact on people's lives. And so scooters were not welcomed 2 years ago. And had we banned scooters at the outset, then I don't know if I'd have seen the vibrant downtown scene that I encountered last Friday night.
What did it look like Friday night when you went downtown?
So a fair amount of social distancing. I'll start by saying that. But there were just people walking around, laughing, having fun, tremendous diversity. Which in downtown Detroit, you know, during the business week is, you know, one scene, and on weekends is another. Just the incredible intermingling of different cultures and people that I saw was something that I hadn't encountered in Detroit before. And it was really just great to see.
And you think that access to scooters is helping that?
I think it's a combination of things. Access to flexible mobility options is certainly one. COVID-19 has been, and I don't think anyone says this, COVID-19 has been great for sort of condensing our road network and transforming things like parking spaces into outdoor cafes. It's been great for encouraging us to sort of transform parks from being open to bicycles and scooters to being pedestrian only. And in that case, you create a much safer, more comfortable environment for people to come enjoy. It's been great for streetscape projects and encouraging people to come outside and sort of make the most of the weather. So it's, you know, obviously this is it's a pandemic. It's hard to find the good in it. But if there was a silver lining, I'd say that, you know, it may be encouraging us all to get outside, even though we're not necessarily close to our neighbors, to at least go to the same park and be in their vicinity. It's reminded us all that these public spaces and green spaces are for us all and that we should go make the most of them.
Yeah, that's really interesting to think about. I mean, I live in Traverse City, and the decision was made to close down Front Street to vehicles, and it's just pedestrian in response to COVID-19. It's so interesting to hear how that the similar changes in Detroit are changing how people are using the city. As we're saying here, I've read about similar things like out west, and we have to choose what we're going to hold on to when this crisis is over. And I'm wondering, you know, I'm wondering if there are other things like, you know, working remotely, which also helps us reduce vehicle use. If you see other things like that we can hopefully hold on to as we decide how we want to rebuild and change after this pandemic.
I hope that, you know, the streetscapes and green spaces that we're creating transition from being temporary programs to being much more permanent. Because I do think cities are richer for those common areas. We can just go outside and relax. Beyond that, you know, you mentioned working from home. I think that there is a learning curve for that when you've worked in an office for all of your career. But it is really nice to have that flexibility throughout your day. You take a break when you need to and not feel so guilty about it. So that's something else that I hope hangs around. The also the embracing of non-car transportation. And so pre-COVID-19, it was really, you know, easy for people to just get in their vehicle, their car, and drive to work. Post-COVID-19, I really hope that, you know, the openness and the willingness to get on a scooter or to get on a bike and to ride to work stays around.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other technologies that you're working on that you want to talk about?
Yes, absolutely. So the part about mobility that I think is frequently overlooked, we hear about ways that we move people. We also need to think about ways that we move goods and how that happens. And so there's one company that I sort of keep on the radar, and I've had some conversations with, called Airspace Link. But they're a Detroit-based company that is thinking through how to create road networks in the sky for drones. And in terms of drone delivery, I mean, you can have things like critical parts shipped from a manufacturing plant to a factory where it's going to be used. And it never has to get onto the road. You can have things like prescriptions dropped off from the pharmacy to an elderly person who couldn't drive to the pharmacy or would have needed a ride to get there. So that's one thing that I'm really sort of excited about, is how Airspace Link and similar companies help to open up Detroit's sky network, if you will, for things like package delivery. And then on top of that, there's a company that I'm actively working with today called Zone, Z-O-W-N. They're a Canadian company that is hopefully going to partner with our Department of Public Works to digitize the curbside pickup program that the city operates. So to support small businesses, the city of Detroit implemented a curbside pickup program where sections of our curb were dedicated to third-party delivery drivers who could then always have a space to come and pick up, you know, essentially meals or deliveries at restaurants. So think about DoorDash, Grubhub, Uber Eats. Zone is working to digitize that process in a way that allows us to understand more about how those spaces are being used, when those spaces are being used, so that, you know, maybe it isn't curbside delivery all the time. And in the event where it needs to transition from curbside to a parking space, we're able to do that. Ultimately, you need data, and Zone is hopefully going to be able to work with us to start capturing that.
Okay, great. It sounds like your work is so much on the cutting edge of technology, and so much of what you do is, you know, pilot programs and really thinking about what's next and how to bring it into people's experience in the city and people's lives.
Absolutely. I'm never bored. I'm usually a little terrified, but I get to have a lot of fun too.
I can see where your engineering background comes in handy.
There is the engineering background for the technology, but then also the law background in helping to develop policies that regulate these new technologies. I'm working on, I'm working with Zone and their pilot platform for the curbside pickup program. Hopefully I'll be able to work with Airspace Link at some point in the future. And then on the other side, I am working with our law department on a scooter ordinance. So a formal legal document that will be used to regulate those vehicles in the city, which doesn't exist today.
So for someone who has never been on a scooter in the city, and for example, and would want to come and try it out, how do you do that? What's the first step?
The first step is finding one. Unfortunately, because of the rise in popularity, we're actually encountering a scooter shortage in the city, where suddenly the number of scooters that we had previously is not sufficient to meet the demand. But once you find that vehicle, it's a matter of downloading the app, entering payment information. In the event that you don't have a credit card, maybe doing some exploration on the forefront to think about different payment options. And so once you've done all that, you're able to unlock the scooter. I'd say that step number one is to go very slowly. Scooters can go from 0 miles an hour to 15 miles an hour relatively quickly. You know, it's an electric throttle. And so be prepared to, instead of depressing the throttle all the way, maybe go a halfway or a quarter of the way, get a feel for the vehicle. And then from there, have fun. One of the things that's great about Michigan is that you're able to use scooters on sidewalks and on streets. And so for maybe, you know, your first few trips, you're not the road warrior who's, you know, in and out of traffic. I'd highly actually advise against that. Maybe you spend some time sort of thoughtfully sharing the sidewalk with pedestrians until you get the hang of it.
Mm-hmm. Great. And then you can just leave it. When you get to your destination, you just leave it there?
No. There is a parking protocol. When you get to the destination, leave it in the berm. So that's the space between the sidewalk and the curb. Typically, you see things like park benches or streetlights. Please do not leave the scooter anywhere. Leave it in the berm and make sure that the sidewalk is still available to individuals who need it, who may need more room, more width, to parents who are walking down the street trying to make the most of a Saturday afternoon.
You can tell that I live in a community that doesn't yet have a shared scooter program, but hopefully coming soon.
I hope so. I think it'd be ideal. Absolutely.
Yeah. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about that we should be sure to cover?
I don't think so. No, this is a great conversation. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us and for your work. It's really important, and we're learning a lot from the city of Detroit.
Oh, wow. Thank you. That means so much.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Speaking of Resilience podcast. You can find more episodes of the Speaking of Resilience podcast on our website, groundworkcenter.org/podcast, and on all major podcast platforms. If you appreciate this content and want more of it, become a podcast supporter by donating at groundworkcenter.org/podcast, and we'll give you a shout out in our next episode. Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast wherever you listen in, and don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave a review. This helps other listeners find the Speaking of Resilience podcast. Like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Groundwork Center and at Michigan Climate Action Network. Speaking of Resilience is created by the Groundwork Center for Resilient Communities and the Michigan Climate Action Network. This episode was produced by Miriam Owsley and Jeff Smith, hosted by Kate Madigan.